United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Allen, and I'm joined by Judge Toth and Judge Valvey. And we're here this morning by teleconference to hear arguments in the matter of Florence Kennedy versus Robert Wilkie, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 19-256. Will counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please make your appearance for the record?
Kevin Medeiros, Your Honor, from Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick for appellant Florence Kennedy. With me on the line is Caitlin Degnan, also of the firm.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Anna Castile for Robert L. Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs. And with me on the line is Christopher Wallace, also for the Secretary.
Thank you, Ms. Castillo. Mr. Medeiros, I understand you want to reserve time for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. 10 minutes, please.
And we'll make sure that happens. And so if counsel are ready, Mr. Medeiros, you can begin.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Mrs. Kennedy is entitled to an effective date of 1 year prior to her July 2015 claim under 38 CFR section 3.114 because FAST letter 13-04 was a liberalizing law or VA issue. The FAST letter was liberalizing because it meets the test outlined by the court in Spencer and Rutan. In Spencer, the court held that a liberalizing law is one that brought about a substantive change in the law, creating a new and different entitlement to a benefit. The court in Rutan reiterated that if a new law provides for benefits not previously available, even though grounded on essentially the same facts previously adjudicated under an earlier law, a new cause of action is created along with a new entitlement to a remedy.
Mr. Medeiros, this is Judge Toth. So I have a question about, I mean, even assuming we agree that this is a liberalizing law, why the 1 year before the filing of the claim? Under what provision could you cite to that would warrant exactly that effective date and not just the date the claim was filed or the date the liberalizing law came out?
Your Honor, under Section 3.114, that regulation allows for an earlier effective date of there are two different choices. So if the claim is filed within 1 year of the liberalizing change, the claimant is entitled to the date the liberalizing change.
Is that A1, A2, or A3? You can get back to me later on this, but I want to know the specific mechanics because I read that regulation. It doesn't automatically mean that any claim associated with the liberalizing law just gets stamped 1 year before its effective date. It looks like there are certain time considerations that are relevant, and you know, I wouldn't mind. You can do this later. I know I'm kind of slow in your pace, but I would like to kind of tie these together just to understand the specifics of it. Okay.
Sure, Your Honor. I can address that now.
Okay.
It's A3. If the claim is filed later than 1 year after the liberalizing change takes effect, then the claimant is at least entitled to consideration. You're right that it's not a mandatory provision.
But here the claim was filed before, right? I mean, the argument would be the liberalizing law came in 2016, right? I may be wrong.
No. No, Your Honor. The liberalizing change, the FAST letter was issued in 2013. Mrs. Kennedy filed her claim in 2015. Oh. So under A3, she's entitled to consideration of 1 year of an earlier effective date.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah.
So in Mrs. Kennedy's case,
this is Judge Allen. If I could just follow up with one question from what Judge Toth asked. Under what factors would VA consider? Assume we said this was a liberalizing law, and so A3 provides that she, quote, may be authorized to have this one-year period. Are you aware of what factors VA would use to determine whether to grant that?
I think it comes down to the agency's duty to maximize benefits. I think that with the allowance for 1 year of an earlier effective date under 3.114, and then the court's case law in cases like Morgan requiring the agency to maximize benefits, that the agency should under you know, the regulation and case law award the 1 year of an earlier effective date in order to maximize the benefits. I'm not sure there's anything specifically requiring it, but I think that under that duty, that would be the test that applies.
All right, thank you.
So in Mrs. Kennedy's case, the FAST letter meets the tests I was alluding to earlier in Spencer and Root, because it created a new and different entitlement to a remedy, which was presumptive service connection for a class of conditions, with the class of conditions being the contributory cause of a veteran's death listed on the death certificate, if that contributory cause is service connection. The FAST letter did not simply give more weight to the death certificate in lowering an evidentiary burden. The FAST letter gave controlling weight to the death certificate. It eliminated the relevance of, in this case, the negative medical opinion that VA obtained during the adjudication of Mrs. Kennedy's second claim. The facts of this case fit the example that the Federal Circuit in Rutan provided. In Mrs. Kennedy's three previous claims, she submitted the death certificate, which ultimately ended up warranting service connection. And she was able to show A and B, with those being the veteran's death and the service-connected condition listed as a contributory cause of death on the death certificate. But she had the inability to show C, a nexus through medical evidence, that the veteran's service-connected depression contributed to his death medically. After the FAST letter, she was granted service connection, like the court outlined in Rutan, by showing A, B, and D. The veteran's death, the service-connected condition listed as a contributory cause on the death certificate, and simply the death certificate listing the service-connected disability. The FAST letter compelled service connection after Mrs. Kennedy filed her 2015 claim. The FAST letter was no different than the liberalizing regulations at issue in Bonner and Brown because it created a new and different entitlement to benefits. In those cases, the agency created new forms of entitlement by adding conditions that qualified for presumptive service connection. So in Bonner, the agency established presumptive service connection for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma based on Agent Orange exposure. A veteran was entitled to presumptive service connection if he was presumed to have been exposed to Agent Orange and had that condition. In Brown, it was presumptive service connection for ischemic heart disease for prisoners of war who had ischemic heart disease and experienced localized edema during captivity. Service connection for those conditions had always been available. If a veteran
I'm sorry to slow up. We're having a fire alarm in our building right now, so I'm going to have to ask that we put the argument on pause for a couple minutes.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I recognize it's unusual. Mr. Block, are you there?
I am, Judge Toth, okay. And I'm the same issue, so I appreciate
okay.
your
Can
your
I ask, can I request maybe we pause for half hour and I'll
or, yes, this is Judge Allen. Why don't we let Judge Toth and Mr. Block escape the building and
well, you
we
know,
will
if, Judge Allen, it just ended miraculously. Marshall was here, but how about maybe we take 10 minutes instead?
Okay, we'll hold the court in recess for 10 minutes, and so we will resume again just after 10:20. All right.
So, Judge Allen, to confirm, then we won't disconnect the conference. Everybody stay on the conference, and we'll pause for 10 minutes.
Unless you and Judge Toth need to evacuate, that's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Mr. Black, this is Judge Allen. Assuming that everybody remains on the call, I think we can begin.
Judge Allen, I think you're correct. I think Judge Toth is back in place. I was waiting for the expiration of our 10 minutes if counsel were sorting notes or whatever.
Maybe I looked at the wrong number. I thought it was about 10:20. Maybe it was 10:21. But if counsel
10:21, 10:22, yeah.
If counsel are on the call and Judge Toth and Judge Falvey are, I think we can begin.
Yeah, this is Judge Toth. I'm ready to proceed.
Judge Falvey?
I am ready to proceed.
And just to make sure, Ms. Castillo, are you still with us?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. And Mr. Medeiros?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm ready to proceed as well.
Well, then you can begin whenever you, or pick up where you left off if you can remember. So go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. Just to briefly summarize, the FAST letter was liberalizing because it meets the Spencer and Rutan tests. There was no dispute in Bonner and Brown that by establishing presumptive service connection, the agency effectuated a liberalizing changes in the law. Service connection for those conditions at issue in Bonner and Brown had always been available to a veteran or their survivor if they could show through medical evidence prior to the establishment of the presumption that the conditions were directly related to service. But presumptive service connection was not available before VA implemented those changes in the law. The same should hold true here. Taking, for example, if the FAST letter had said hypertension instead of contributory cause, in other words, grant service connection by presuming that hypertension contributed substantially and materially to the veteran's death if it was listed on the death certificate as a contributory cause. If it had said that, the FAST letter would be identical to the liberalizing regulations in Bonner and Brown. Substituting a veteran's service-connected condition listed as a contributory cause for hypertension does not materially change the fundamental inquiry, which is whether the FAST letter created a new cause of action.
Mr. Medeiros, this is Judge Falvey. One of the distinctions between Bonner and this case is that it was, in fact, a regulation. What makes this fast, and you kind of glossed over this at the beginning of your argument and jumped right into whether it was liberalizing or not, but are you arguing that the FAST letter is law?
Yes, Your Honor. We're arguing that the FAST letter is law because it has the effect of a law, and that's the fundamental inquiry.
Are you saying that both the statute and the regulation speak of law or act or a VA issue or a administrative issue? So you're arguing that this is law?
Yes. We're arguing that it's law because it was substantive. So the FAST letter represented a substantive change in the law, much like the FAST letter at issue in Military Order of the Purple Heart. The Federal Circuit reviewed VA's FAST letter there and found that it did not comply with current law, and because it did not,
But in MOPH, it was found invalid then, the FAST letter was, because there wasn't proper promulgation of a regulation. It wasn't validly adopted. I mean, you're saying that the Secretary can, by FAST letter, promulgate law or issue regulations?
Your Honor, the FAST letter, it did promulgate law, but under the regulation, it didn't need to be specific to a law. Under the regulation, a liberalizing change can be through a liberalizing law or VA issue. So if it doesn't meet the test...
What is a VA issue then? What's the meaning of that terminology?
A VA issue, what we know from the regulations, is a rule or pronouncement approved by the secretary or by the secretary's direction. In this case, the director of the Pension and Fiduciary Service is authorized by the secretary to establish the rules governing entitlement to DIC benefits.
Where are you getting your definition for VA issue?
The regulation, 38 CFR, section 3.114A3, states that it's liberalizing law or VA issue approved by the secretary or by the secretary's direction.
I'm just asking where you get the definition for the term VA issue.
I'm not sure that
the regulation.
I'm not sure that the courts have defined what VA issue actually means. I think
so
that
don't we need to do that before we get to the question of whether it's a liberalizing VA issue or not? Don't we need to first determine this is a VA issue?
Yes, I think that the court needs to find that this is a VA issue and that it was okay. A pronouncement of the secretary directing adjudicators.
That has the force and effect of law, I think you said. And the secretary can do this outside of the issuing a regulation.
The secretary can. The issue in this case, Your Honor, is not whether the secretary went through the proper channels, for example, under the APA, to establishing the substantive rule. The court needs to look at the agency's actions here in issuing the FAST letter and determine whether it had the force and effect of law. And we'll look at the FAST.
Under MOPH, shouldn't we strike it down then if we find that they issued a substantive change without proper rulemaking? We should strike it down? And how does that help veterans?
I don't think, Your Honor, that the court needs to strike it down if it didn't go through the proper channels, because this is not a direct rule challenge. The FAST letter is also favorable to Mrs. Kennedy. It was the reason she was granted DIC benefits. I think that you outline a fundamental issue here, which is that the agency can issue a FAST letter that amounts to rulemaking, a substantive change in the law, and then basically say it's not a substantive change in law because it didn't go through the proper channels. And in MOPH, the issue there with the FAST letter was that it was depriving veterans of benefits. And here,
right,
we see
that secretary can do illegal things as long as they're favorable illegal things.
I'm not sure that issuing the FAST letter is illegal, because the agency can promulgate rules in order to you know benefit veterans and claimants. The illegality is not the question here, and fundamentally it's whether the FAST letter affected a change in the law, added on a new entitlement to benefits to what existed prior to its issuance. And I think that all of the elements here for the court to find that it did are met, because the FAST letter was issued, Mrs. Kennedy's claim was granted pursuant to the FAST letter, and the FAST letter established that the presumptive service connection for contributory cause of death, much like the regulations at issue in Bonner and Brown. So the title of the document is not dispositive. DAV the Federal Circuit and DAV stated as much. The inquiry for the court is whether the agency's action, had the effect of changing existing law, affecting Mrs. Kennedy's rights, and the court should find.
This judge, so, I mean, did the FAST letter at all change the way that 3.112 was interpreted, or did it change the substance of the regulation in any way?
No, Your Honor, the regulation remains the same. I don't think the language changed, but for that period of time that the FAST letter was in effect, it added a new right, and the agency treated it as much to that regulation. So before the agency issued that FAST letter, Mrs. Kennedy's claim was denied three times because of the lack of a medical nexus. Once the agency issued that FAST letter in 2013, Mrs. Kennedy applied for a fourth time in 2015, and her claim was granted right away. It shows that by issuing the FAST letter, the agency intended that all claims for service connection for a cause of death where a veteran's service-connected condition was listed as a contributory cause were to be granted. They were to presume, the adjudicator was to presume service connection. They were not allowed to undertake any development. Just like the regulations in Bonner and Brown, where a veteran met the in-service element and had a current condition, that was all Mrs. Kennedy needed here, the service-connected condition and the death certificate, and then the presumption applied.
This is Judge Falvey. So it didn't create a new benefit. It just changed the evidentiary threshold for getting the existing benefit, right?
No, Your Honor. It wasn't simply a burden-lowering issue. That is what the court found was not liberalizing in Foreman, where the regulation governing service connection for PTSD 3.304 was amended to lower the burden to establishing one element of service connection. The veteran still needed to have a diagnosis of PTSD. The stressor still needed to be consistent with the veteran's service. Here, the FAST letter eliminated the evidentiary burden. So all Mrs. Kennedy needed was the death certificate, and the agency was to presume and grant service connection without anything more. So it's not simply lowering the burden, it's eliminating it.
Okay. Thank you.
If there are no questions, Your Honor, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Judge Toth, do you have any other questions?
Not right now. Thank you.
Judge Falvey?
I don't. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Medeiros. Ms. Castillo, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I think it's important to begin with just a very brief background on this FAST letter and its promulgation.
Ms. Castillo, before you do that, could I ask a question? Because it was the subject of a lot of Judge Falvey's questions, but also is intriguing to me. What does, quote, issue approved by the secretary or by the secretary's direction mean? What does that mean, an issue?
Your Honor, the language of the regulation doesn't really bring light as to a direct meaning.
I don't understand that answer. Right. So. You're right. By reading the regulation, I can't tell what an issue approved by the secretary is. But you'd agree with me first that has to be different than a law, right? It's got to be something different than a law, right?
Correct, Your Honor, because then the regulation actually separates the two. It's either
right.
A liberalizing law or a liberalizing issue.
Okay, so What is the Secretary's position about what that means, issue approved by the Secretary?
Your Honor, I can't answer that right now. However,
Let me finish. Why can't you answer that question? You're here arguing that this is not it's not liberalizing under this provision. The provision says law. Let's just assume this isn't a law. How can you take the position that you're taking without, as Judge Falvey asked your friend on the other side, answering the antecedent question about whether this is an issue approved by the Secretary? So is this an issue approved by the Secretary, the FAST letter?
No, Your Honor. It's a guidance, a letter issued by Pension and Fiduciary Services.
So then you just answered for me definitively. You said this is not an issue approved by the Secretary. If you can't tell me what an issue approved by the Secretary is, how can the Secretary take the position that this is not an issue approved by the Secretary?
I say I misspoke, Your Honor. I can't take a position on that right now, but I can provide a supplemental pleading to the court.
If we do want a supplemental brief, we will ask for it. So the parties, unless they are submitting a Solti notice, shouldn't independently submit a brief. We'll confer about that.
Correct.
All right. Well, okay. Continue.
And Judge Allen, this is Judge Falvey. If I could add, and I don't think we should see a Solti notice response unless new law has come to your attention.
No, absolutely. I was thinking that I didn't want to preclude the parties from telling us, for example, that something good or bad happened to Mrs. Kennedy.
Yeah.
So.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Thanks.
Your Honors, so prior to the FAST letter, Pension and Fiduciary reviewed the procedures that adjudicators were following in determining these claims and found that adjudicators were engaging in unnecessary development. This was leading to overdevelopment of claims where the record already contained sufficient evidence to decide these claims. So this FAST letter was issued to essentially curtail the adjudicators' wide discretion in developing claims when it was unnecessary. But what the FAST letter doesn't do is limit the evidence adjudicators can consider in adjudicating these claims. A narrow and strict reading of the FAST letter as limiting consideration to only a death certificate isn't supported by the regulation. Section 3.312 specifically instructs that adjudicators are to decide these claims, and I quote, by exercise of sound judgment without recourse to speculation, after a careful analysis has been made of all of the facts and circumstances surrounding the death of the veteran, including particularly autopsy reports. So, Your Honors,
Ms. Castillo, what do you do then with two factors here? One, the FAST letter states, if the service-connected disability was a contributing cause of death, as listed on the death certificate, presume that it contributed substantially and materially to the veteran's death. That doesn't seem to allow any discretion with the rating specialist.
Yes, Your Honor. Admittedly, the unfortunate phrasing of that sentence, viewed in isolation, would make it appear that adjudicators must look only to a death certificate in adjudicating these claims. But that sentence, taken or read holistically with the regulation, I think makes it clear that adjudicators are expected to consider all of the evidence surrounding the death of the veteran. And the plain language of the regulation supports that reading.
But of course, in this case, there was a negative nexus opinion from VA in the record. And that was a basis on which the claim had been denied before. And then when this rating specialist looked at the claim, all he or she did was actually what the fast letter said, looked at the death certificate. It listed the cause. He or she presumed that it was a contributing, that it was a led substantially and materially to the veteran's death, and apparently entirely ignored the medical opinion.
Your Honor, there's always the case that one adjudicator weighs conflicting evidence differently at different times than another adjudicator would. So perhaps one day an adjudicator looked at this evidence and assigned more probative weight to the negative medical opinion and then denied the case, but then another adjudicator on another day looked at the evidence, found both the death certificate and the medical opinion probative, and granted the claim based on the benefit of the doubt because the evidence was in equipoise.
Is there any evidence at all beyond speculation that that's what this rating specialist did? I mean, it doesn't look to me like there was any weighing of the evidence. It looks to me as if the person looked at the death certificate, looked at the fast. As a matter of fact, that's what VA said, right? We are changing our position now because of the fast letter. It didn't. If there's something in the record in which the rating specialist engaged in the type of evidentiary balancing that you have just described, can you let me know where it is?
No, not here, Your Honor. This is based on what adjudicators are instructed to do based on the regulation.
But my point is, you can't point me to anything that says that the rating specialist who granted the benefit in this case did the weighing that you just described and determined that the evidence was in equipoise and employed the benefit of the doubt doctrine. You're just saying that's hypothetically something that could happen, right? But you can't point me to anything in the record that says that happened here, can you?
No.
This is Judge Favley. If I could follow up, can you point to anything in the M21, I guess, that tells the adjudicator they're supposed to be doing this analysis that you just described?
The regulation requires, Your Honor, a weighing of the evidence, and I think it's clear.
In all cases, but there's no specific provision that provides, when presented with a death certificate that lists a contributory cause of death, here's how you go about determining whether or not the presumption applies or should be, rebutted?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
Your Honor, the fast letter didn't create a new cause of action or entitlement. Before the fast letter, the facts required to prove entitlement were A, a veteran's death, B, a service-connected condition, and C, the service-connected condition is either a principal or contributory cause of death. And these same facts are still required today after the fast letter. And that's what sets this case apart from the line of cases that include Bonner, Williams, and Brown.
This is Judge Valdi. Can the Secretary create a new entitlement through a VA administrative issue less formal than a regulation?
Under MOPH, Military Order of the Purple Heart, that would require a promulgation of law in accordance with the APA.
So since the answer is no, according to you, do we need a different standard for determining whether something is a liberalizing issue versus a liberalizing law?
Your Honor, it's difficult to
It seems like what you're kind of arguing is that unless something's a regulation, we don't get into the liberalizing law analysis. So what is a liberalizing VA issue then? And can you give me an example of one?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not necessarily arguing that we need a regulation. My oncoming argument was to essentially differentiate between what happened in Bonner, Williams, and Brown, and what happened here. Mm-hmm. Here, the facts required to prove entitlement didn't change, whereas in Bonner, Williams, and Brown, a new set of facts were created, creating two different venues for service connection. So prior to the promulgation of the regulations in Bonner, Williams, and Brown, claimants had to prove three facts to get service connected. They had to prove a current disability, an in-service incurrence of that disability or aggravation, and a nexus. But after the promulgation of the regulation, they had to prove a different set of facts. So for the Agent Orange cases, they had to prove qualifying service in Vietnam, and then
Ms. Castillo,
subsequent development.
This Judge Toth, I mean, is part of the difference between maybe Brown and Williams and the case here is that, like, the causal nexus in those cases with the Agent Orange could only really be proven by kind of scientific studies that were simply beyond the capacity of an individual veteran to offer, right? So it wasn't really an evidentiary burden in the sense that a veteran was never really capable of satisfying that burden on their own. And so the Secretary's action of sort of removing the burden was more akin to sort of offering an entitlement to this than it is the case here with a contributing factor where the veteran could certainly prove it. It was the death certificate had a certain probative evidence, but the fact finder was allowed to disregard it, just like in Foreman, they could disregard the veteran's testimony as to what happened. Am I correct in understanding that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Could you please repeat the question? I didn't get the first part.
So, right. I mean, the issue, if in comparing between a case like Brown and Foreman, right, we're looking at whether, so in Foreman, you've got the veteran's testimony about PTSD can serve as a corroborating factor, right? And the court rules that the liberalizing effect of that was to reduce an evidentiary burden, right? Whereas in Brown, the addition of certain, like, ischemic heart disease or certain things to the presumptive list wasn't merely the reduction of an evidentiary burden. It was a new entitlement, right? And I'm asking if maybe in distinguishing between these two things, which very often appear very close, the issue might be that the evidentiary factor, right, in the Agent Orange cases was essentially a scientific study that would have been beyond the ability of a veteran to prove on their own. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so. Yes, and that can be seen as a difference, but that doesn't eliminate the claimant's ability to claim if he can't prove, or if he can't prove on one basis, he can prove on another. That's the determining factor, is if there's a new claim has been created. But here, Your Honor, we have that, and the facts, again, the facts that need to be proven is the death of the veteran, a service-connected condition, and that the service-connected condition is a contributing or principal cause of death. The argument that...
Ms. Castillo, this is Judge Allen. Can I bring you back to a question that Judge Falvey asked? So both parties have talked about the cases that have come before, but as far as I can tell, all of those cases fit comfortably in the concept of dealing with, quote, law, meaning they were a regulation. This appears to be the first case in which we are considering a test for determining whether something is liberalizing when it is not a law, but perhaps an issue of the secretary. Do you think that we should employ the same test? Because that test seems to be creating for law, seems to be creating something that has to actually be created in law. But if issue of the secretary is something different than that, and the regulation provides that an issue can be liberalizing, then the test that everybody's talking about seems to be a little bit like a round peg into a square hole.
With your indulgence, Your Honor, I'd like to consult with my co-counsel.
Sure.
Your Honor, I believe that we can employ the same test.
And so then that would suggest, in again, following up on something Judge Falvey asked, I think he asked you something along the lines of whether the secretary could, outside of the strictures of developing a regulation, create a new benefit. Could the secretary ever do that outside of the promulgation of a regulation pursuant to notice and comment, for example?
No, if it's a substantive rule, Your Honor, it has to go through the APA.
So if you say that, then you are saying that nothing could ever be liberalizing as an issue, because the test that's developed about whether a law is liberalizing is this substance procedure. But if you say to me that the secretary couldn't create this substantive benefit without making a law, i.e. a regulation, then what do we do with the part of the regulation that says an issue can be liberalizing? Do you see what I mean, that those positions seem to be entirely inconsistent with one another, because it essentially makes issue of the secretary a null set. Nothing could ever be included in it under the test that's been articulated.
This is just Alvey, or it means a regulation. It's the statute refers to an act or issue, and perhaps it's bad phraseology in the statute, it should say an act or regulation, something like that. But I think Judge Allen's raises a good point. It can't mean what you're arguing and still be subject to the same definition for whether it's liberalizing or not.
With your indulgence, Your Honor, I'd like to consult with my co-counsel.
Sure.
Your Honor, I think I kind of got away from the argument here. The argument that the law changed as to the requirement of the proofs or the proofs required isn't supported by the regulations. The argument is that pre-SAS letter, the death of or the proofs required were that the death of the veteran, a service-connected condition, and a medical opinion of nexus. But that's not what the requirements were pre-SAS letter or post-SAS letter. The requirement, and there's two different issues with that. It commingles, for the lack of a better word, the facts required to prove entitlement and types of evidence that a claimant can produce to prove those facts. And secondly, 3.312 has no specific evidentiary requirements. And as I noted earlier, the language actually contemplates review of all of the evidence surrounding the death of the veteran. So, Your Honor, the facts here this case does not meet the Rutan test. And as it took from Spencer, there's no difference here between what claimants had to prove pre-FAS letter and post-FAS letter. This is different from Military Order of the Purple Heart, and in that case, the court found that the procedures the FAS letters essentially infringed on rights already provided by the regulations. In this case, the FAS letter hasn't changed anything. And a strict reading of the FAS letter would require VA to ignore relevant evidence, and that can't possibly be a reasonable reading of the FAS letter with the surrounding law. Your Honor, I think this case the facts are pretty similar to the facts in Haas v. Peek. The court considered an M21 provision, which specifically instructed that in the absence of contrary evidence, service in Vietnam will be conceded if the record shows that the veteran received the Vietnam Service Medal. And in that case, the Federal Circuit found that the provision wasn't substantive because it simply provided guidance as to how an adjudicator should go about gathering information to make these determinations and to see if the test had been satisfied. It went on to explain that to treat the receipt of this medal as a test of eligibility would be contrary to the Agent Orange Act, because at that point it was undisputed that some service members who received the medal were never either in Vietnam or its first territorial waters. I think the same logic can be applied in this case. If we accept that after the FAS letter, that the facts to be proven by claimants to prove entitlement is a service or the veteran's death, a service-connected condition, and a death certificate with a service-connected condition, then it would appear that claimants who can't produce a death certificate with a service-connected condition would automatically be precluded from entitlement, because then they would be unable to satisfy that test. Your Honor, I just want to loop back to Judge Allen's question about an issue. it's not clear what it means. With the regulation. But Your Honors, with that, if Your Honors have no additional questions or further questions, I think my time might be running.
No, you probably have to. This is Judge Allen. I do have one question before you don't. You're not required to ever use all your time, but I do have one question, which is the same question I asked your friend on the other side. In 3.114A3, the section that we're talking about, it uses the phrase, it says may be entitled to the earlier effective date of 1 year. What standard would VA use to determine that? Assume we said the thing is a liberalizing issue of the secretary, whatever that means. Could the board or the VA say, but you don't get the year earlier? Or in other words, I'm just unclear as to what standard VA would use to do that once you've determined something is liberalizing.
Your Honor, I'm unclear as to that, but again, if your Honor or if the court requests it, I can provide a supplemental pleading. However, a reading of the regulation would show that there is that we wouldn't deprive them of a year.
I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure I understood that last phrase you said, because are you saying that VA, once something is determined to be liberalizing under A3, the VA's position is you get the earlier year period? Or are you saying that there's discretion to give something less than a year or nothing?
Your Honor, I wouldn't think that that we deprive them of a year.
But you could. I mean, I'm just trying to find the secretary's position, because usually the word may connotes discretion, right? And so
correct.
This uses the word may, which by itself suggests that VA could conclude something is liberalizing, but not give the earlier year or give something else. And I just want to know what the secretary's position is about whether, in fact, we could rule this is liberalizing and the VA could say, yeah, but we're still not giving you a year, right? I just need to know what the secretary's position is about how A3 operates in reality.
Your Honor, in reality, the regulation, the wording of the regulation would look like they would give some discretion.
Okay, thank you. Judge Toth, do you have any further questions?
I do not, thank you.
Judge Falvey?
I do have a couple. Can you give me an example of a liberalizing VA issue? I think I asked that, and I don't think I got an answer, but I may have missed it.
I can't, Your Honor. Not off the top of my head.
Okay. Do you think the board needs to be bound by a VA issue for it to be liberalizing?
Yes, Your Honor. Because if the board's not bound, then it can't. Then if it's not bound, it doesn't have to follow it.
So how do you make sense of then that the 38 CFR 19.5 says the board is not bound by department manuals, circulars, or similar administrative issues?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't think I understand the question.
Well, it uses the same term, administrative issue, and it says the board is not bound by them. So you said for it to be an administrative issue, the board would have to be bound by it, yet the regulation 19.5 says the board is not bound by these internal directives.
Correct. So the board is not bound here, Your Honor, to directives and similar issues like that.
So this is Judge Allen, just to follow up on that one point then. But if 19.5 says the board is not bound by administrative, quote, issues, whatever that term means, and your position is that something can't be liberalizing unless the board is bound by it, but yet 3.114A3 contemplates an issue potentially being liberalizing. Do you have a thought about how you can reconcile those points?
Your Honor, if it's substantive, it would be contained in beside the manual. This is just in the manual. It should be a regulation.
But 19.5 says that something that is a, quote, administrative issue does not bind the board, but 3.114A3 says that something that is an issue can be liberalizing, right? I mean, is there something that fits into something that would bind the board despite 19.5 but still be an issue that's not a reg? I mean, does such a thing like that exist, or is it like a unicorn?
It's unclear, Your Honor, as to the word issue. So I guess it would be a unicorn. but again, if it's substantive, it would be contained in something other than the manual. The manual is an internal document and doesn't necessarily constitute substantive rulemaking. Your Honor, if there are no further questions, I know my time is up. The Secretary respectfully requests that the court affirm the board decision. And because this FAST letter is not a liberalizing law or issue warranting an effective date, because there has been no new entitlement or a claim or a new claim that has been made by this FAST letter. Thank you.
Judge Falvey, did you get a chance to ask all your questions?
Yeah, that was my last one. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Castillo. Mr. Medeiros, you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Secretary mentioned that if a claimant cannot prove their claim on one basis but then can prove the claim on another, then that is what makes a new claim, or in other words, a new path for entitlement. Mrs. Kennedy meets that test here. The FAST letter created for the first time the availability of presumptive service connection, and she could not prove her claim previously without that presumption. Now, the Secretary also mentioned that the FAST letter simply curtailed an adjudicator's discretion, didn't limit the evidence that an adjudicator can consider. That's simply unsupported by a reading of the FAST letter, which states to presume and grant service connection. It's
Mr.
also Madeira, unsupported.
This is Judge Young. As you might have guessed from some of our questions in your friend's argument, at least some of us are interested in or not the test for determining whether something is a liberalizing law can make sense in the context of a liberalizing issue. Let's just assume for a moment that it would be inappropriate for the Secretary to create presumptive service connection substantively outside of a regulation. Let's just presume that. I know that's not your position. Do you believe there should be a different test for how one determines whether an issue is liberalizing?
Your Honor, I think the test could be different, given that the agency hadn't gone through the APA. We have a line of case law for the Federal Circuit that have reviewed VA letters and found that the relevant inquiry is whether they were ultimately substantive. So if a VA issue that hasn't gone through the APA is found to be substantive, then it should be considered, in this case, liberalizing. In the Federal Circuit cases where the FAST letter or in Coalition for Common Sense, a deer manufacturer letter were reviewed, the Federal Circuit found them substantive because they had a gap-filling function. They either established a new requirement of the parties' rights affecting their rights and obligations, or deprived them of that. And I think the fundamental inquiry is similar, whether the VA issue, like in this case, created new rights for the claimant. And I think if that were the test, and I think that's what we focused on in the pleadings, was whether the FAST letter created new rights for Mrs. Kennedy, and our position is that it did, that it created the availability of presumptive service connection. And because of that, it's substantive, and that it affected her rights, and it's not just procedural, clarifying the agency's procedures or providing their own interpretation of what the law says. It created a new basis for entitlement. So I think.
So would VA be able to, in your view, without going through notice and comment, create a benefit that did not exist before?
I think that it can, Your Honor, and I think that it did with the FAST letter. Mrs. Kennedy was able to apply for service connection for the cause of the veteran's death before, which she did. And after the FAST letter was issued, by telling adjudicators to presume and grant service connection, it created that new path to entitlement in the form.
Well, then why would we ever – why? And I don't mean this facetiously, but why do we need the Administrative Procedure Act then, right? If VA can do exactly what it could do in a regulation, create something that's binding, a presumption, by not going through the APA, I mean, that seems like an odd position.
Well,
because then why couldn't VA do something that's negative for veterans in that way?
Well, I think you hit on it there, Your Honor, that we need the APA to prevent the agency from enacting rules that are negative to claimants. When we look at the case law coming from the Federal Circuit in Coalition for Common Sense and Military Order of the Purple Heart, that's precisely what happened in those cases. The agency issued substantive rules in VA letters that did not go through the APA that negatively impacted claimants, and the Federal Circuit you know, struck down those rules, finding that they were substantive, that they had the force and effect of law, because they affected claimants' rights. So I think we need the APA to prevent that situation. But the agency is also authorized to issue rules, which it did with the FAST letter and by creating that presumption. So I think the answer is we need the APA to prevent, like you mentioned, Your Honor, the negative impacts of informal rulemaking.
Thank you.
And to get back to the point that the FAST letter doesn't limit the evidence, as the Secretary mentioned, that an adjudicator can consider, that's not supported by the FAST letter, and it's not supported by the facts of this case. VA took the FAST letter, applied as the presumption, and because of that, the court should find that it was liberalizing. And to address one more point, the Secretary mentioned, the claimant who is unable to produce a death certificate with the service-connected condition listed as a contributory cause of death would not be precluded from establishing service connection. The same rules would the previous presumption rules would apply, in that if there's some indication that the claimed condition contributed to the cause of death, but it's not listed on the death certificate, the duty to assist rules would apply. If there was an indication meeting the McClendon elements, the claimant could still seek to prove the claim that way. But what the FAST letter did was remove that element, eliminating the evidentiary burden and providing for presumptive service connection in cases where the claimant is able to produce the death certificate. So I think there's a distinction there, and the ultimate inquiry for this court is that record at 10. The board said that the FAST letter was not substantive, was not liberalizing. The question for the court is whether that is true. And I think both the plain language of the FAST letter and VA's actions in this case demonstrate that the FAST letter was liberalizing, and that Section 3.114 is for application because of that. So if there are no further questions, Your Honor, we ask the court to find that the FAST letter was a liberalizing law or VA issue, and that Mrs. Kennedy is entitled to consideration of 1 year of an earlier effective date under Section 3.114.
Judge Toth, do you have any questions?
I have no questions. Thank you.
Judge Falvey?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Well, we thank the parties for your argument and putting up with our...
Judge Allen,
yes.
Excuse me. I think I do, I guess. This argument of yours that, I guess, we only apply the APA when it's harmful. Do you have a case to cite that's something we should do or can do?
No, Your Honor, I don't have a case. I don't think this case falls into the APA realm of cases where the Federal Circuit has reviewed similar issues that were detrimental to claimants. I think fundamentally the court is reviewing what the board did in finding that the FAST letter was not liberalizing. There's no question in this case that Mrs. Kennedy's claim was granted pursuant to the FAST letter. I don't think the APA only applies if the issue is detrimental to a claimant. It does act as a check on the agency in those cases. And I think it's appropriate to go through the APA's the APA's procedures, but if VA goes outside of those procedures and does what it did here and establishes a new form of entitlement, a new path to a benefit, then the court can find that it did so and it was liberalizing. And that's what we're asking the court to do.
Thank you.
And thank you to the parties and the cases submitted.
The court is in recess.